This is Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase, our performing monthly arts program dedicated to Iowa's not-for-profit arts and cultural organizations. I'm Jacqueline Hallbloom. The Iowa arts scene blooms in May. This month, we'll investigate the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum's visiting exhibition on display at the Grout Museum. We'll hear about Wapello County's American Gothic Performing Arts Festival being held in June. We'll speak with Trio Voce's pianist about their future Ames concert. We'll learn about an internationally acclaimed Irish tenor's May performance in Holbrook. And we'll get the inside scoop on the Des Moines Symphony's upcoming new season. And Maestro Junta shares how he and one of his best friends found out about their induction into the Mid-American Music Association Hall of Fame. That's all ahead on Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase. Thanks for joiding us.
I got a call from the Midwest chapter of the Mid-America Music Association Hall of Fame. And evidently there are chapters all over the United States that are functioning, which I did not know about. And the call came about 6 weeks ago and said that we're thrilled that we'd like to induct Simon Estes and myself as the first two recipients into the Classical Music Hall of Fame. And I was delighted, and the man that called me, I said, you know, why me? And he said, well, we wanted to add some class to the presentation. And I said, well, you got it half right because you have Simon there. And that's enough class for anybody. But it was great fun, and it was a wonderful ceremony held at Wartburg College. It was really an honor.
Well, congratulations, and it's so wonderful that both you and Simon Estes were selected, and I can't think of two more worthy inductees into this organization and their Hall of Fame.
Thank you. Well, and you know how fond I am of Simon, both as a musician and person, and helped him a little bit with some of his philanthropic efforts. You know, we raised some money a few years back for the Parkersburg tornado and for those families there. And about a year ago Christmas, we had the Youth Symphony here involved with his concert at the Hilton Coliseum on the Iowa State University campus for raising money for mosquito nets to help children in Africa that were dying, something like, I don't know, five children a minute or something, because malaria-carrying mosquitoes were killing these infants. So you put a net over them for $5 and they're safe. And so we were able to raise about $100,000 for that project.
That's amazing. And not to forget about your fantastic careers. Both of you have had incredible careers.
Well, it has been a great ride for me. Hopefully there's some years left ahead. And as your listeners know, over public radio, the Des Moines Symphony is sounding mighty fine these days, and I'm surrounded by a lot of really wonderful people, and it's a great time to be the music director of the Des Moines Symphony, the best time ever, and I hope that we can continue along this partnership I have with this wonderful organization and go for many more years here in making great music for the state.
You just announced recently your 2015-16 season. So tell us a little bit about the Masterwork concerts.
Yeah, it's a great season. A lot of wonderful music that people will know, including the Tchaikovsky Fifth and the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto, the Tchaikovsky First Piano Concerto, the Moldau. Lots of appealing music for audiences and challenging for the orchestra, but also some things that are a little unusual. We're doing the Prokofiev Fifth Symphony in a Beyond the Score format. A couple other pieces that people may not be as familiar with, but it's going to be a terrific season on our Masterworks. And I should also mention that we're starting the first Pops series the orchestra has ever had next season, and that'll include Michael Crawford in the music of Billy Joel, the Texas Tenors, of which, of course, there's a Waterloo Cedar Falls connection with John Hagen. They're coming in on New Year's Eve. And then the fabulous young Broadway star Sutton Foster will be performing with us in April. So we're very excited about this series and hope that that continues to help us build our audiences for the future.
Well, let's just briefly go through your masterwork season. And one thing that really stood out was, of course, Peter Hamlin, and you're going to have a world premiere.
You know, Peter, of course, is known throughout the state of Iowa as the host of a program called Concert Classics for many years in Cedar Falls on KUNI. And as he was working as a radio producer, he was also receiving his master's degree in composition from UNI, later went on to get a doctorate from Eastman, became a professor of music and composition at St. Olaf College, and now is in Middlebury College, his alma mater in Vermont, as the head of the department and professor of composition. And during those years in Iowa, he also was the host of the three-week public broadcasting show about the state fair that was live, that came on public broadcasting every evening of the state fair. So Peter is very much an Iowan, considers himself an Iowan, and knows more about the state fair than anybody that I know. So we brainstormed a little bit, and I said I'd like to have a piece written in honor of the state fair, and we came up with the title Symphony on a Stick. And that will be premiered next September with the Des Moines Symphony, and it will include some fabulous footage shot by a local film crew that will include everything from the big board to the lights to the hymn sing to the amusement rides and everything that people can imagine that goes on at the state fair. It will be included in this piece. And as you know, he's a lot of fun to be around, so we are extremely excited about having Peter back here. And I'll tell you, this piece will be something that we'll remember for a long time. It's going to be a real potpourri of sounds and color, and it's also going to be kind of a funny piece, too. So we're going to have a great time performing it.
And you are bringing some up-and-coming names, performers that will be performing with the Des Moines Symphony, starting out with this Natasha. Tell us about Natasha.
Yes, Natasha Paremsky is someone that I have wanted to work with for a very long time, and finally got to hear her last summer with the Minnesota Orchestra playing with Andrew Litton. She's going to play the Tchaikovsky First Piano Concerto with us. We've also got several other young emerging stars coming, and one that I would like to mention to your listeners is Simone Porter. She'll play the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto with us in May of 2016.
Which will be very, very exciting. And yep. You have a British violinist coming as well.
Yes, Alina Yuriosti is a British violinist who is currently living in Philadelphia and studying there, and she is magnificent. She's brilliant and will be very exciting for our audiences.
And you're bringing in a conductor and his son. That's quite a package.
Yeah, Jared Schwartz is a renowned conductor, longtime music director of the Seattle Symphony and mostly Mozart Festival in New York City. And Gerard has since retired from the Seattle Symphony, but still actively conducting. And he's got a very talented son in Julian Schwartz, who is a cellist. Julian will be playing the Shostakovich First Concerto with him. And Jerry's going to be conducting the great Brahms Fourth Symphony. So it's going to be a wonderful concert in January while I'm in the Bahamas or something vacationing.
Tell us about this organist you're going to have.
This came about because, as your listeners will recall, our longtime organist, Carl Staplin, passed away a couple years ago. And Carl was a staple in the Central Iowa community, longtime organ professor at Drake University. And he has a very long list of talented students that have now gone on and are playing in cathedrals and performing institutions all over the world. And Jeffrey Brilhart is one of his prize students. Jeffrey is the chief organist for the Philadelphia Orchestra in the Verizon Center and plays in some of the magnificent churches in New York and the Philadelphia area. And Jeffrey is a Lowry organist specialist, and the Lowry Organ Company has guaranteed us that they're going to bring their most exotic and high-tech organ that they have. They're going to bring it to Des Moines, and that's what he's going to be playing on.
And you're going to do that Symphony No. 3 of Saint-Saëns.
We are. How can you go wrong with this piece? This is one of the great pieces in our repertoire. We're going to do that on the second half, and then Jeffrey's going to play the Poulenc Concerto on the first half.
Maestro Joseph Junta, music director and conductor of the Des Moines Symphony. Maestro Junta goes on to talk about next season's appearance of Avery Fisher Career Grant winner and pianist Charlie Albright.
He's a terrific young man and plays with a maturity and a sensitivity that I just don't find in many young people. And he's got the same kind of spirit and personality that Shawn had, that Jia Cheng Shawn had last month when we brought him in from Aspen and Philadelphia to play the Chopin Concerto.
So tell us, Maestro Junta, where can folks get tickets and more information about your season and the pop series and all of these cool things?
Yeah, it's all announced on our website, dmsymphony.org. Of course, you can always go through Ticketmaster or call our office at 280-4000 and ask for Pam or Sophia. They can help meander people through tickets. But the website is really the best one to find the information and to process their tickets.
The Des Moines Symphony season always opens with their Yankee Doodle Pops concert, held every year on the West Lawn of the state capitol right before the 4th of July.
This is going to be one of the more interesting and challenging Yankee Doodle Pops that we've ever done. We are celebrating all things Iowa. And as a result of that, I've invited two Broadway singers to sing music for Music Man, State Fair, and we're working currently now on inviting Jason Robert Brown, who is a wonderful composer and conductor and renowned for Bridges of Madison County, the music of that. We're trying to get Jason here to work with our singers and do some of that music, which is going to be very exciting for our audience. We're also going to do the usual 1812 overture, the fireworks, the marches, and we're going to sneak peek a movement or two of Peter Hamlin's Symphony on the Stick in celebration of the State Fair. So we're going to put lots of music into this program, and it's going to be great fun for all of us. And this year, the Yankee Doodle Pops will be on July 2nd. Concert starts at 6:30 with a pre-concert, and then the Des Moines Symphony part of it is at 8:30.
Maestro Junta, music director and conductor of the Des Moines Symphony, conversing about the orchestra's upcoming season. The Drake Orchestra will perform on the 6th at the Harmon Fine Arts Center in Des Moines. On the 8th and 9th, the Des Moines Symphony Academy will present their Four Seasons Project culminating performances at the First Christian Church in Des Moines. The Flying Pan's Steel Drum Band will appear on the 9th at the Pella Opera House. On the 14th, the Quad City Symphony will present their 100th season celebration concert, featuring Yo-Yo Ma performing the Dvorak Cello Concerto. Iowa Public Radio Classical will broadcast that program live starting at 7:30 p.m. On the 17th, Simon Estes will perform his Roots and Wings tour at the Sondheim Center for the Performing Arts in Fairfield. And on the 29th, Davenport's Figge Art Museum will host a Cellobration. Just ahead, what does the musical Always Patsy Cline, The Three Little Pigs, and an Iowa Cabaret all have in common? Trio Voce is being presented this month by two major arts organizations in Iowa. Two beloved Irish musicians head to Holbrook, and we'll learn about the U.S. Holocaust Museum's Deadly Medicine exhibit currently on display at the Grout. You're listening to Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Arts Showcase.
As far as we know, the Waterloo-Cedar Falls metro area is the smallest metropolitan area to host this exhibit. I've seen this exhibit in a number of places, and they're all very, very large cities. So this is really a unique opportunity to see an exhibit that doesn't travel around all that much, and that certainly is not likely to be anywhere near our area for quite some time. So we're very happy to be having this exhibit, sponsoring and hosting this exhibit. And I hope people will take advantage of the time that it's here.
UNI Center for Holocaust and Genocide Education Director Dr. Stephen Gaze, talking about the Grout Museum's current visiting exhibit on loan from the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. The Grout Museum partnered with UNI Center for Holocaust and Genocide Education to bring the presentation to Iowa. UNI's center works to raise awareness not just about the Holocaust, but other genocides and human rights issues by confronting their causes, including intolerance, ignorance, racism, and anti-Semitism. Their programming focuses not just on the UNI campus, but also includes collaborations, workshops, and other outreach activities across the state.
Last year, our collaboration with the Grout Museum brought a traveling exhibit up from St. Louis that focused on the Bosnian War and genocide. Also last spring, we organized a 20th anniversary commemoration of the beginning of the genocide in Rwanda. This coming fall, we're going to have an event coinciding with the 100th anniversary of the Armenian genocide, an event that has become very newsworthy in the last few days because of the strong position that Pope Francis has taken on the nature of that tragedy. So that's an event that we want to use to raise awareness in our public about.
Stephen shares more about the visiting exhibit and the center's partnership.
This is the fifth year of a collaboration between the Center for Holocaust and Genocide Education at UNI and the Grout Museum District, in which we bring each spring a traveling exhibit dealing with the Holocaust, some other genocide, or some human rights issue. We were fortunate this year that we had a large exhibit space available that normally isn't available. And so we were able to think about bringing a much larger exhibition than we normally do. And we worked with the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum to be able to bring this very, very significant exhibit, Deadly Medicine, which is one of the most important that the museum has ever produced, to bring it to the Waterloo-Cedar Falls area. And it will run through Saturday, June 6th. So it's a very important collaboration for us, and I think it, by having it at the Grout Museum, you know, we make it accessible to a much broader range of people.
Well, let's talk exactly then about this Deadly Medicine and creating the master race. Tell us about this exhibit and the impact it's going to have and kind of what's in this exhibit.
Deadly Medicine looks at an important part of the foundation of the ideology of the Nazi Party and the agenda of the Nazi state when the National Socialists gained power in 1933. It looks not just at the persecution of the Jews of Germany as well as other groups, political opponents, the Roma, Jehovah's Witnesses, homosexuals, so on and so forth. But it shows how central to the Nazi vision of the future was for there to be the use of medicine and scientific research to bring about an improvement of the so-called Aryan race. We often think about the elimination of groups of people as an important part of the Nazi program, and certainly that was central, but also this idea that a group of people could be selectively improved to produce so-called super race was the heart and soul of Nazi thinking about the future of Germany. And I think what Deadly Medicine underscores is the enormous level of active participation from people in the most important professions in Germany, medicine, science, in the law, in the judiciary, to help bring about this twisted vision of how the German people ought to evolve. And I think that's what's so stunning about the exhibit as you move through it, to see that what we call Nazism was not a program organized and orchestrated by a small group of fanatics, but something that stretched into the fabric and really shaped the fabric of German society for those 12 horrible years of the Third Reich.
And this exhibit doesn't necessarily have works of art, but it has more documents and films and all sorts of snippets of history.
There's everything from posters which exhorted the German people to support the efforts of their government to improve, to purify the so-called Aryan race, to, you know, very, very poignant photographs of children and adults who became the subject of inhumane medical experimentation and so-called mercy killing, something that happened on an enormous scale long before systematic destruction of the Jews of Europe and of other groups got underway.
So how can people find out more about this exhibit and, I mean, prepare themselves to even view this exhibit?
Well, I think the last part of your question, how can people prepare themselves for this exhibit, we've emphasized in all the publicity that we've done, this is a difficult exhibit to go through. There's a lot of disturbing material, and the fact that we can recognize connections between this history and some of the things that we debate today with regard to medical ethics and the improvement of the human species can be quite troubling. So with that caution in mind, people can get more information from the Grout Museum website, gmdistrict.org, from the Center for Holocaust and Genocide Education's Facebook page, which is UNICHGE, or they can call either the Grout Museum or the Center for Holocaust and Genocide Education. Our number is 319-273-3870. If they'd like to get questions answered or discuss anything regarding the exhibit.
Is there any age recommendation you would give on this exhibit?
There isn't any explicit recommendation, but I would say middle school and up, and even middle school students, I think parental guidance should be exercised.
UNI's Center for Holocaust and Genocide Education Director, Dr. Stephen Gaze. Tonight, the UI Opera will present opera scenes at Riverside Recital Hall in Iowa City. Tomorrow afternoon, Waterloo's First Congregational United Church of Christ will host the Festival of Spirituals Now and Then. Tomorrow night in Des Moines, Simpson alums Brandon Hendrickson, Heath Huberg, and John Moore will appear in concert at St. Catherine of Siena Catholic Church and Student Center. On the 8th and 9th, Luther Opera will appear in performance in Decorah. And on the afternoon of the 9th, the Ames Children's Choir alumni will present a concert at the First United Methodist Church in Ames. Don't go away. Trio Voce's concert will polish off this season's Ames Town and Gown series. The heavenly sounds of tenor Anthony Kearns returns to Holbrook. And Wapello County pulls out all the stops next month for their American Gothic Performing Arts Festival. You're listening to Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Arts Showcase.
I'm an Iowan, born and bred Iowan, have lived here all my life. And something that when I ask people, have you been to Wapello County? Have you seen the American Gothic House? Sometimes people will say, no, but I'd really like to. And I think that what people will find is that if they take a journey to southeastern Iowa, it is a delightful and a unique area, and one that I think they would have an absolutely wonderful time, a joyful time, and possibly even a surprising time once they see some of these wonderful sights and also then see some of the extremely talented performers that are in the area. Sometimes we Iowans are very humble, and we need to perhaps share some of these things with everyone in our wonderful state. And I hope that people would come to Ottumwa and to Eldon and share in some of these wonderful performances.
The director of Wapello County's American Gothic Performing Arts Festival, Miriam Kenning. Miriam's duties, besides directing, include choreographer, producer, writer, and board member. She spearheads this festival with Dennis Wilhoit. The festival takes over the county in June.
We had a group in southeastern Iowa that was called the Greater Ottumwa Vocal Arts Project that we ran for 11 years, which was an extension, a musical program for young people in grades 4 through 7. And then we also produced shows in the summer for high school and college age students. And it was an educational focus. And then my partner, Dennis, went on to become a professor at the University of Wisconsin. And he is an opera voice instructor. And now is the principal tenor with the St. Louis Symphony and Chorus, and comes to Ottumwa 3 days a week to teach. And then also, we now have taken over the GOVAP nonprofit, and the last 3 years, it has been the American Gothic Performing Arts Festival, which really is a festival of all performing arts that we're producing in Eldon, at the McAfee Opera House in conjunction with celebrations there, and then also in Ottumwa at Bridgeview at our Civic Center. So that's what we do.
So tell us a little bit about this McAfee Opera House.
You would love it. It is an old opera house that was built in 1890. Lots of shows used to come through there, and there's a wonderful board of citizens in Eldon that have put together and redone this opera house. The capacity is about 260 people. And I was just talking with someone, and I said, an acoustic group would love to perform at the McAfee Opera House because it's like a giant megaphone. And we've worked with this board, have been able to put in curtains and equipment, and they have been very gracious to allow us then to do performances there. In fact, we were the first group to perform at the McAfee Opera House just 3 years ago. It's air conditioned, comfortable seats, and we've done two really fun musicals there, Pump Boys and Dinettes, and then Smoke on the Mountain. And this year we're doing Always Patsy, which is a Patsy Cline musical. And we have a wonderful young woman who, if you shut your eyes and hear her sing, and then you open your eyes, she's absolutely stunning. And she will be our Patsy Cline. Her name is Cammy Milliken, a wonderful talent, and we'll be doing that performances during Gothic Days in Eldon, and of course that's where the American Gothic House is located.
That's what I was going to ask you next, that Eldon, Iowa is really on the map, and it started because of this house that was part of Grant Wood's famous painting.
Yes, I always love the story that Grant Wood, the reason he came to Eldon, it's kind of like a Shel Silverstein book, his book of poetry, you know, where the sidewalk ends. That was where the pavement ended. And Grant Wood came to Eldon and for a while really spent quite a bit of time sketching, painting, connecting with some artists, and has the American Gothic, of course, you know, is the most iconic, other than the Mona Lisa, painting that there is. And here you go to this wonderfully quaint town, and they have a wonderful Gothic center there, and then the Gothic House. It's surprising how many thousands of people come there every year.
So it is open to the public?
The Gothic House, just this year, they're now giving tours even inside the Gothic House. Yes. And the McAfee Opera House, you can have organized tours to it also. We've done a lot of work, too, the American Gothic Performing Arts Festival, with doing mystery bus tours that come through. People from Chicago, from out east, come through, do tours, and we do performances for them, either at the Opera House or at the 100-year-old Hotel Ottumwa in Ottumwa. It's been great fun.
So you mentioned this Always Patsy that's going to be at the McAfee Opera House, and that's going to be on June 12th through the 14th?
Correct. And then we are also, once again, having bus tours come in and are scheduling performances the week of the 15th through the 18th also.
And you have some other things that are happening as well. You have two other shows that will be performed.
Correct. You know, we have Cargill Meat Processing in Ottumwa, and they are sponsoring Children's Chorus that will also be entertaining people during the month of June. They'll be having like a choral camp and singing before some of our shows, which will also include, of course, the Always Patsy. And then we're doing a traveling show, children's opera of the Three Little Pigs. We'll be traveling around Wapello County at various sites to do these performances at camps and at school activities that are happening in the summer throughout our county, which is always great fun. And we created this Iowa Cabaret, which is a wonderful piece with music, jokes, storytelling, magic. It is a cabaret piece about Iowa. And we've been doing this since last fall for these bus tours that come through Iowa. And it's just been so well received. So we are extending it and doing a 90-minute show on the 19th of June at the Bridgeview Center in Ottumwa. We have a beautiful, beautiful civic center that was built about 10 years ago that has a lovely theater. And we'll be performing the Iowa Cabaret and then doing afterwards some wonderful, what we call Iowa desserts, plus some Iowa bands performing afterwards that we are in the process of connecting with and putting that all together for a really fun evening. We try to make certain that people understand that the Performing Arts Festival is one that is theater, it's classical music, like with the children's opera, it's musicals of various kinds, and then also we have some people that will be coming in and performing before and after the various productions too.
So how can folks get more information and get details about your American Gothic Performing Arts Festival?
There are several ways that we can have that happen. We do have our website, which is American Gothic Fest, FEST.org. And all of the ticket sales will begin on May 1st at this site. And then also we have our email, which is AGPAF, A-G-P-A-F, 2013 at gmail.com. And then we have our phone, which is 641-777-9636. Or if you're like me, I go on Google and I type in American Gothic Performing Arts Festival, or if you type in American Gothic, about three or four lines down, you will see the festival.
The director of Wapello County's American Gothic Performing Arts Festival, Miriam Kenning. Besides the American Gothic Festival, June in Iowa also includes the Iowa Arts Festival in Iowa City, which runs June 5th through the 7th, Chamber Fest Dubuque, which kicks off on June 7th and continues through the 18th, the McNider Arts Festival, which is held on June 13th in Mason City, the College Hill Arts Festival, held June 19th and 20th in Cedar Falls, the Des Moines Arts Festival, which runs June 26th through the 28th, and the Marion Arts Festival is held on May 16th. And the list goes on. Try to take in at least one of these festivals if you can. Just ahead, two Irish lads head to Iowa, and Trio Voce performs a spring chamber music concert in Ames on Tuesday, May 5th. This is the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio.
A group together, you build a career together, and you build a kind of a way of working and a relationship, a working relationship, a musical relationship. So playing chamber music gives one a chance to explore the music in a very detailed and intimate way, and one has the freedom, because you're not following a conductor, to express the music in a very personal way. You're not bound by anyone else's tempo or decisions interpretively. So as a group, we come to all of those decisions. It is a much more intimate experience. I mean, you go to a chamber music concert, you see just a few people on stage, you have a good view of them, you can hear them, you're not sitting way back at the back of the hall. And it's a direct communication in a certain way. We get a lot from the feeling we get from the audience, and I think sitting where they are in a more intimate space, they to can get something that's a little bit different than if you go to a huge hall and hear an orchestra. Orchestra is great, it's a big, powerful instrument, but this is a different kind of experience.
Patricia Tao, pianist with the ensemble Trio Voce. Patricia shares details about her musical background.
I grew up in Miami, Florida, and I went northeast to Boston to study for my undergraduate degree, and then went to Indiana University for my master's, and to Stony Brook, New York for my doctorate. So while I was at Stony Brook, I formed a piano trio. That's where I actually became much more active playing chamber music. My teacher was Gilbert Kalish, and he's done a lot of chamber music throughout his life. So it was a great place to study and to get involved in that. So after I finished there, I formed a professional trio, and we won some awards and got to tour and finally got a manager. And so I performed with them for about 10 years. They were called the Guild Trio. And part of the time I was in residence at the University of Virginia teaching as well. And then my husband and I decided we really need to have children. And my husband is also a pianist, and he was working at the University of Bellingham in Bellingham, Washington. So I took a break from the trio for a few years and had children, and then he moved up here for a job, and then 2 years later, a job opened up, and I had a job. So it was great. It's been great for both of us.
Where are you exactly teaching now, and what are you doing currently?
Okay, so I'm teaching at the University of Alberta, and both my husband and I are the two piano faculty here right now, full-time, and so that's what I do, in addition to my performing.
Patricia fills us in on what Trio Voce will present when they perform in Ames. She also talks about the musical backgrounds of violinist Jasmine Lynn and cellist Marina Hoover.
And Marina is the one who's from Edmonton. And through my son, actually, when he was a child, I met her brother, James Hoover, who also works here at the university, and it was in the computing science. Our kids went to preschool together. So when I first met him here, he said, oh, my sister's Marina Hoover. She used to be with the St. Lawrence String Quartet. St. Lawrence String Quartet is a well-known string quartet. They're actually residents of Stanford University. And they're probably the most famous Canadian string quartet, at least they were at the time. So I said, oh, she plays with... And so, of course, I was looking for chamber music partners, having just recently moved to Edmonton. So I said, oh, I wonder if she'd like to come and play a concert, and maybe she could visit her family while she comes. So I contacted her and invited her to play. We sonata piano and cello sonatas together. And so then we just decided that we wanted to continue that relationship. And so over the years, she was based in Chicago and I was here, and there's a direct flight. So it was doable for us. We would get together and rehearse and play concerts and whatnot. So that lasted for a few years. And then she had been playing some string quartets with Jasmine in Chicago and said, I've met this fantastic violinist. We really should form a trio. So that's how that happened. But anyway, so Marina spent a good time of her period of her life playing with the St. Lawrence String Quartet. You know, she went to Curtis as an undergraduate, and then she went to Yale for her master's degree. And somewhere along that way, she met the other members of the St. Lawrence String Quartet. And so I think she concertized with them for about 14 years. So she wasn't at Stanford with the quartet, and then because of family reasons, she decided to move to Chicago. So I'm lucky because that's how I sort of met her, through her brother here. And Jasmine went to Curtis as well for her schooling, and she won second place in the Naumburg violin competition, and as well, she was a prize winner in the Paganini competition, so she was a real powerful violinist and didn't immediately, I think, start in chamber music, but was doing probably more solo. And then she got a job very briefly with an orchestra, and then she formed this Formosa String Quartet. So she's a member, actually, of two chamber ensembles, the Formosa String Quartet and our group Trio Voce.
Well, tell us about Trio Voce and how long you have been together, and you have done some fairly amazing things as a trio.
Well, I think, you know, we don't actually have an official get-together date. Marina wanted us to meet, so I remember I was in Chicago, and we planned a concert, and we had very little time to rehearse because Jasmine was busy with some other things, and so we basically had a really quick rehearsal, and we performed the next day. And I think it was a good rapport. We all felt that it actually, under the circumstances, went quite well. We felt comfortable playing with each other. And so I think that was in 2008. And so at that point, we sort of decided, well, let's try and pursue this, and let's do this more often. And so we planned a lot of, we've been self-managed and planned all of our concerts, you know, for the last 6 years on our own or so. We do have a manager now, but it was a lot of work. And the way we do it is when we plan a tour or a series of concerts, we usually meet in Chicago because it's cheaper for one person than for three people, because Marina has to buy a ticket for her cello. So we'll usually meet in Chicago, and we kind of hole up in Marina's house for a few days, rehearse, you know, eat, rehearse, eat, that kind of thing. And then we go and we perform. So it's kind of intense when we're together because we have usually a lot of work to get done.
Tell us about this concert that you've prepared to play in Ames for the Ames Town and Gown Concert.
Okay, well, we'll be doing three works. The first is by Arvo Pärt, an Estonian composer. This piece is a really interesting piece. It was written in 1992 and was written for a dear friend of his, the violinist Oleg Kagan. So what Pärt does is he took an early Mozart sonata movement, piano sonata movement, the middle movement, the slow movement. And the reason I think he chose Mozart is because Kagan actually loved Mozart a lot. And he brings it kind of into the 20th century. One of the, I guess, the important intervals in this piece is a minor second, which is the two closest, very closest notes together. And it's a very dissonant note. It's not pretty to the ear. And often that kind of interval denotes a kind of either pain or sorrow. And so he sprinkles this movement with this commentary of this harmony, this sound. So it brings this unusual flavor to the movement, because you do hear the Mozart, the actual tune and the accompaniment. It's all intact. It's divided between the piano and the strings. But there's commentary with these dissonances. And then he adds an opening section with the strings, a middle bridge, and then he ends with the strings again playing these kind of spare intervals. And so I think it's a very beautiful, moving, simple piece, but extremely effective. And it's not very long. It's a quiet opening. But he did an amazing job in a very simple way. So I've always liked this piece a lot. The second piece we're doing is by Rebecca Clark, an English composer. This piece was written in 1921, and it actually won second prize in a competition in which they did not know she was a woman. That and the Viola Sonata are probably her two most well-known chamber music works, along with many songs she wrote. And when she was young, she actually was sort of kicked out of her father's house and had to support herself, and he apparently was not a nice man, but she had to support herself, and so she played in groups, and she actually was the first woman, I think I read, to be admitted to one of the British orchestras, which at the time was probably all male, which is, you know, this was the 1920s, early 1900s. So, yeah, and then she supported herself as a player, as a violist, as in various groups, and concert-wise, quite a bit, actually, even in Hawaii and, you know, in the United States. She was in the United States during the Second World War because she had two brothers living there. So, yeah, and the other wonderful thing is that she married her husband, James Friskin, when she was, I think, in her 60s. They had been old friends at school, and they met again in New York, and they got married, which is great. So, but her own composing life, I think, ended most. She did a lot in the 20s, but then after that, she found other means of making a living, because as a woman composer, I don't think that was viable at the time. So then there's just been renewed interest in her music since the 1970s. So this trio is another really fine work of hers. And it's kind of, I always say, it's passionate English music. So it's because it has definitely French influences. I mean, she uses a lot of the techniques that you would hear maybe Debussy or Ravel using, such as bitonality or whole tone, pentatonic scales, different scales that create different kinds of colors. So in that way, it's coloristic music, but it's also really passionate. And so you'll also hear some tunes that sound like English, perhaps English folk music. So it's a wonderful mix, I think. And then the last piece is the very well-known Brahms B Major Trio, and we are doing the revised version. There are two versions. There's an original version that Brahms wrote when he was a mere, I believe, 21 years old, really young. It was his first major chamber music piece. And then at the end of his life, he decided to go back to it, and he changed it. He took out a lot of material. It was a sprawling, huge work. In his life became, I think, a much better composer in that he was able to be more concise with his ideas. But he really completely changed this piece in many ways. And so it's a beloved piece, and it's amazing that a piece that he wrote when he was so young and then came back to at the end of his life, you know, could be so successful. But it really is a great piece. So, yeah, that's our program.
Patricia Tao, pianist with the ensemble Trio Voce. Trio Voce will perform next Tuesday, May 5th at 7:30 p.m. at the Ames City Auditorium. Ames Town & Gown and the ISU Department of Music are working in partnership to support their concert. Free tickets are available for students K-12 and in college with appropriate ID. Following the concert, audience members are invited to meet and share conversations in the lobby with the musicians. To get tickets or more information, please go to amestownandgown.org. Tickets will also be available at the Ames City Auditorium next Tuesday night before Trio Voce's performance. This is the Iowa Arts Showcase. Holbrook is getting ready to roll out the green carpet. Tomorrow afternoon at 4, one of Ireland's favorite Irish tenors will return to the historic St. Michael's Church in Holbrook for a brilliant performance.
When people have the opportunity of hearing a tenor from Ireland singing wonderful songs, not just Irish songs, but across the board, and you have somebody like Patrick Healy, whose experience in opera and in Gilbert and Sullivan and in theatre and worked with some of the great conductors and singers down through his career, are in, if you're near the area of Holbrook, Iowa, I think it's worth the spin out to come and hear it. You know, the chance of meeting people in small towns like that, you know, is rare. You generally have to go to a major city, which can cost a lot of flight and travel and hotels. So if you're in the vicinity and you're in driving distance, I'd say come over and join us for an afternoon of fun. And thanks to all the fans that listen in. That's what keeps our kind of music alive. We're like the old troubadours travelling around the country. And it's an old style of music, I suppose. It's not pop music, so we have to do what we can to keep this music alive. There's an audience for it, and it's very entertaining, and people enjoy it, and we shouldn't let it slide.
One of PBS's famed Irish tenors, Anthony Kearns, speaking about his performance tomorrow afternoon in Holbrook. Anthony will be appearing in St. Michael's Church with his Irish pianist, songwriter, radio host, and opera coach, Patrick Healy. Anthony shares a wee bit about his early career.
Before the Irish tenors came along, I was, you know, like most kids, playing music and involved in music in school and after school activities and just got on with my life when I left school and entered into hotel management for a career I wasn't really interested in, but I knew I needed to do something. So, and in the meantime, I was singing and at every opportunity I got. But I entered a competition in 1983 that kind of introduced me to the right people, you know, singing teachers in Dublin. And that's where it's at in Ireland, really. In Dublin, is all roads lead to Rome, they say. Well, in my case, it led to Dublin. So I was introduced to singing teachers, and that got the ball rolling on the singing career in 1993.
Well, I had read somewhere that they had this competition that you were talking about, and it was because that there was a new 10-pound note called a tenor. Is that right?
It was coincidental. It was a clever gimmick, really. They launched this competition through the Bank of Ireland just to promote the launch of the new 10-pound note at the time, so the currency was changing. And they decided, you know, 10-pound, the 10-pound was known as the tenor in short, and they tied the two together and made something of it with public TV and radio or whatever, and that's how the competition was born, and I was fortunate to win it, so.
And you sang two songs in this competition?
I did what I knew at the time. I was singing some, you know, musical stuff and Irish tunes. So I sang The Impossible Dream and then, of course, Danny Boy.
And then that's really how it led you into getting professional training?
Yeah, so I blame that competition.
Well, how then did you really get hooked into this PBS and all of this kind of thing?
It was through the Irish Tenors breaking forth into the United States. Back in 1998, we recorded our first PBS special, and that really kicked off the whole thing. In 1998, we went on tour. We did the PBS publicity machine, as they say, promoting from town to town and station to station, and it swept from coast to coast, and we were very fortunate. Everything Irish at the time was gold, as they say. Riverdance was very popular at the time, and the Irish Tenors came on the scene, and PBS were really putting out good shows. They had Andrea Bocelli, and they had the three tenors, which were hugely popular at the time. So it was early days.
And you, in those early days, received gold and platinum and double platinum CDs.
Yeah, I take the gold and platinum now, thank you very much.
Last year, you were part of the Memorial Day concert and part of the PBS special, which is always a big favorite.
That's a wonderful show to be a part of. It's such a buzz around Washington at the time, and they do such a fantastic job. They have a lovely lineup of people, cast, and people working on it. Jerry Colbert and his team do a great job in putting on what is a proper tribute. And I was delighted to be a part of it. And I thought a fitting song, too, was The Lord's Prayer, which was apt for the evening. And it's a tastefully done project, you know, nicely done.
And you also then sang for the Memorial Museum in New York City for 9/11.
Yes, I've done a lot of charity events and military events, you know, in my career. A lot of events in Washington, D.C., as it happens. So wherever I can lend my hand, I will, if time permitting and schedule allows. But they're great events to be a part of. But as I say, it's all shoulders to the wheel. You know, you need everyone, all boats rise in a rising tide. And in events like that, that's where people come together, make a difference.
And tell us about your solo album that came out in 2014.
Well, I was getting a lot of pressure from from a lot of fans and friends to say, listen, you have no album out, come on, are you ever going to record? I had 13 or 14 of the Irish Tenors at this stage, so under the gun I was pressurized into it, but I did it anyway. I recorded a lot of songs that I would perform on concert stage or in solo capacity. So it's a mixed program, some operas, some musicals, some Irish tunes, some evergreens, as I call them. It's a mixed program of songs. There's a nice selection of music on it.
And those are the kinds of things that you're going to be performing tomorrow afternoon at 4 p.m. when you are going to be appearing at St. Michael's Church in Holbrook, Iowa. And apparently you have become a tradition in Holbrook.
Well, it's a wonderful venue. It reminds me and my accompanist, Patrick Healy, who will be with me. You know, we're both from Ireland, we're both country people, and when we travel back out to Holbrook, it's a wonderful occasion. It's like going home. The countryside, it's where I grew up in the country, it's similar to that. The church and the graveyard and all the names that remind you of people back home, all the Irish names that are buried in that graveyard, it's amazing. And they've used the church to great use, they put it to great use for concerts and events like this. It's a community facility and they all use it for that purpose. And we're always delighted to go back there. It's lovely. We're treated so well. It's a lovely evening. and look forward to it as always.
So what will folks be treated to?
Well, people that know Patrick Healy and Anthony Cairns know that we will put out the stops with duets and solos and comedy and tears and a mixed program, songs like Gort na Mona, Percy French song, Bonnie Mary from Argyll, a song, you know, Scottish song for those that have a Scottish origin. Stuff like Mario Lanza would perform, Because, for example, or So Deep Is the Night. It mixes across the spectrum of classical and Irish and comedy, and it's a mixed bag, as I say, and there's something in it for everyone.
So what are some of the Irish favourites that you'll be performing?
Well, I perform a lot of Percy French and Thomas Moore's melodies. I think they're beautiful, beautiful songs that capture the beauty of Ireland and the people and the characters in the country. So there'll be some Percy French songs, some Thomas Moore. Of course, Danny Boy has to feature in the programme. It's always a great favourite. It's a song that pulls at the heartstrings. You know, that's the kind of rep that I'll be performing. People will enjoy it. There's something for everyone in it.
And do you take requests from the audience?
Generally, no, because we have to, you know, rehearse our program, put it together. Once we put it together, that's pretty much it, because you need to have the music for this. And that's the problem. With a lot of this music, it's extremely hard to find. Even with today's technology and on the internet, you can't find it in the keys that you need it. You might find it in older keys or other keys, and you have to transpose it, and the arrangements are generally poor that are in print format. So any of the pieces that I've been performing with Patrick Healy, a lot he will have arranged for me, and they're pieces that I've gotten done over the years and I have stored for myself. So you hold on to them like gold dust, you don't give them away.
World-famous Irish tenor Anthony Kearns talking about the musical gems he'll be singing tomorrow afternoon with Irish pianist Patrick Healy. This concert marks the sixth time that Anthony has sung in the historic St. Michael's Church in Holbrook, sponsored by the Friends of Old St. Michael's, a not-for-profit organization. For more details and to get tickets, please call 319-936-8675 or send an email to loretta3548@gmail.com. Iowa Public Radio's Arias in April broadcast season ends this weekend with the Cedar Rapids Opera Theater's Carmen production tonight at 7 and again tomorrow evening at 10. The Symphonies of Iowa series continues tomorrow afternoon at 4 and Monday evening at 7, this week featuring the WCF Symphony Concert with guest artist Daniel Bernard Romain. Today's Iowa Art Showcase broadcast is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Program thanks for this show goes to Joseph Junta, Stephen Gaze, Miriam Kenning, Patricia Tao, and Anthony Kearns. Production thanks goes to Iowa Public Radio's Tony Daner, Phil Moss, and John Pemble. Thanks for this show also goes to IPR's Jason Burns and Garrett Van Leeuwen, and music director Al Scherz. Program research was provided by Nick Carlo, Nick Schumacher, and Stacia Fortunes. I'm Jacqueline Hallbloom. Thanks for joining us. For more information on Iowa Public Radio's programming schedule and Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase, please visit our website at iowapublicradio.org.